Hey, we've had pre-chewing across the United States and internationally. Hep B in Mongolia. And now for something completely different. Social determinants and their impact on young children's health. And these data are from the state of Colorado. Welcome, my dear friends. I see you in the audience. So I'm going to start today by giving a little bit of an overview of determinants of health, although I'm sure you're all very familiar with that model. How do I go forward? Oh, sorry, first, nothing to disclose, nothing at all. So the determinants of health. This model comes from Healthy People 2010, and if you've had the pleasure to preview Healthy People 2020, you'll see that they've built on the social determinants model, making it even more complex and more arrows and different things interacting and going different ways. But I think it's a really valuable model because it really demonstrates that individual behavior, whereas kind of at the center of the model and important, as is our biology, really our physical environment, clean air, water, land, and the built environment, as well as our social environment, connections to other people, safe neighborhoods and such like, are important. Access to quality health care, of course, matters. And at the top of the model, you have policies and interventions that either promote health or detract from health. In Colorado, we've kind of moved, I'm happy to say, from a model of just looking at individual risk factors and behaviors and outcomes to really looking at the determinants of health model and trying to understand what is the context in which we all find ourselves and why does that matter and impact our health, and then more importantly, once we understand those factors that are at play, how can we intervene in ways that improve the health of populations? I like this quote because I think it really demonstrates the power of the social determinants model, particularly for young children. And this is from the president and CEO of the RWJ Foundation, and she says that obstacles children encounter early in life can set off a negative chain of events so hard to break they can transcend generations. Poor education leads to limited jobs, which leads to lower income, living in poor neighborhoods, poor housing, higher crime, more violence, limited access to food, safe places to exercise, medical care, all of which leads to poor physical or mental health. When I was a social work student, we called this the cycle of poverty. Now we call it determinants of health. But the fact remains that the context in which we find ourselves truly matters. The data that I'm going to present today come from the Colorado Child Health Survey. And in Colorado, we are fortunate to be one of just a tiny handful of states that have tried to fill the data gap for children. As you know, there are surveillance systems on the national level that take care of adults, adolescents. Very few exist to handle the information we need to make decisions about children. What we have done in Colorado is created a survey that's a callback survey from our behavioral risk factor surveillance system, which is the largest ongoing health study in the world. It's a random digit dial survey of adults 18 and over. What we do is when we get an adult on the phone, we ask them if they have a child between the age of 1 and 14 in their household. If they do, we garner their permission to call them back to do another study about the health of their child. We call them back in about 2 to 5 days and ask them about topics related to physical activity, nutrition, access to care, behavioral health issues, injury, etc. For this particular analysis, we needed to combine several years of data to get a robust enough sample size because we really wanted to focus on children ages 1 to 5. And my co-presenter, Heather Dubiel, is going to talk to you at the end about why that particular early childhood population was singled out and specialized for this analysis. We ended up with a sample size of about 2,000 children. And then we wanted to look at our data by income and race ethnicity. Before I get into the child health data, I just want to give you some of that contextual data for Colorado. And you will see, and I know you're from all over the country, all over the world, and probably these results would hold in any area. These are high school graduation rates from 2009 for Colorado, and you see the total is about 74%. Whites and Asian children, or adolescents, having a much higher graduation rate. Latino, Black, and American Indians having a lower graduation rate. Why does that matter? Well, think back to the social determinants of health. If you are not a high school graduate, it is very hard to get a good job at a living wage, to support a family, to live in a neighborhood that's safe, to access the services and healthy food that you need to be healthy. Not surprisingly, poverty rates in Colorado kind of co-vary with those graduation rates, with whites having a lower rate of poverty. The blue bar is all people. The greenish bar is children below 18 in poverty. And you see for Latinos, Blacks, and American Indians, very high rates of poverty, particularly for children. You see nearly a third of Latino children in Colorado living in poverty, as well as Black children. Not surprisingly, the median household income for Coloradans also goes along those same lines, with Latinos, Blacks, and American Indians having higher or lower median household income than whites and Asians. So right here you can kind of see that we can just look at those data and you kind of almost know the punchline, okay? You can kind of figure out what is this going to mean. But what we did is we looked at several factors, health factors, according to household income and race ethnicity. And for this study, unfortunately, our numbers were too small to look at African American or Asian children or American Indian children. So we just looked at white versus Hispanic children. But we looked at low income, and in this case, very low income, 100% of poverty or below, or upper income, 100% and above. So let me orient you, because the next graphs all look exactly the same. So for each area, this is access to, I wish I had a pointer. Do I have a pointer? I have no pointer. I'm coming over here. Do you? Okay. I just want to make sure you can understand what I'm doing so you can follow the flow. So this is healthcare access. So these are uninsured, have a gap in healthcare, unmet healthcare need. For each of these graphs, the first bar will be white children, the green bar will be Hispanic children. These will be children above 100% of poverty, and these will be children below 100% of poverty for each of those indicators. So you can see, just in terms of having health care coverage, insurance status, white children are uninsured at the rate of about 5%. Hispanic children, 18%. Children below 100%, or I'm sorry, above 100% of poverty, about 6%. Children below 100% of poverty, 21%. Likewise, gap in health insurance coverage. White children, much lower rate of gap in health care coverage than Hispanic children, and our upper income children, much lower rate of a gap in coverage. Look at 28% of the lowest income kids had a gap in coverage. Unmet healthcare need, again, the white children have a lower rate than Hispanic children, and the upper income children have a lower rate than of an unmet healthcare need than our lower income children. Similarly, we find results for oral health. And remember, these are just children 1 through 5. So these are our tiniest, youngest, most vulnerable children in Colorado. If you look at no regular source of dental care, 9% of white children do not have a regular source, whereas 1 in 4, 25% of Hispanic children do not have a regular source of care. Likewise, our upper income children, 9.5% do not have a regular source, compared to nearly 1 in 3% of our lowest income children. Unmet dental care need, you see the same pattern. Not surprisingly, that last variable, teeth in fair or poor condition, because these children do not have good access to care, we have for white children, 2.6% have teeth in fair or poor condition, compared to 20%, 1 in 5 of Hispanic children. And likewise, for our higher income kids have a much lower rate of teeth in fair or poor condition. Why does oral health matter? Well, the studies are coming on stronger all the time, not only the connection between chronic disease and in older age groups, but kids who have teeth in bad condition, who have oral pain, can't learn. They're struggling. And one study I read showed that a lot of times kids with oral pain have what's called referred pain. So their pain isn't experienced or expressed in their mouth, and so they can't even really tell you. They might have a vague headache or something, but there's such a lot of pain going on inside their bodies that it makes them hard to focus, concentrate, and to learn. So we have kids right here, about 1 in 5 of our Hispanic kids and our low-income kids in Colorado perhaps entering an early child learning situation in a place where they're experiencing this oral pain. This is general health status and a mental health measure. You see the amount or the percent of children reported in fair or poor health status. Again, you see the exact same pattern. For our white children and for our upper income children, very low percent of kids who have overall fair or poor health status. Our Hispanic children and our lower income kids, much more likely to have fair or poor health status. With regard to emotional difficulties, problems getting along with others, same pattern. White children, upper income children, much lower rates, although they're all still pretty high, if you will notice. But for Hispanic children and low income children, again, 1 in 4. And these are, again, children 1 to 5. These are our little tiny kids entering our early child care systems. Food insecurity, we measure that by asking how often in the past 12 months have you had to rely on a few kinds of low-cost food to feed your family because you're running out of money to buy food. And these are people who answered often or sometimes. For white children in Colorado, it's about 18.5%. Again, I will say very, very high for food insecurity. But amongst Hispanic children, it's nearly half, okay? 1 to 5-year-olds, food insecure. Even more dramatic for our upper income kids, still 1 in 5 kids, food insecure, but for our poorest children, over half, 61%, having to rely on low cost, low quality food. Having been breastfed for the first 12 months of life obviously has a relationship to IQ, to attachment, to obesity. Here we have the reverse pattern with our white children, our upper income children, more likely to have been breastfed for the first 12 months of life than our Hispanic children or our lower income children. Can't do a presentation without looking at TV and obesity, so here it is. Same pattern, television viewing 2 or more hours a day. For white children, about 15%. Hispanic children, 1 in 4. Children 2 to 5 years old, watching TV more than 2 hours per day. Similar pattern for our income. Not surprisingly, you look at the proportion of overweight and obese. White children, 25%. Still way too high, get that. These are children 2 to 5 years old. 1 in 4 overweight or obese. For Hispanic children, it's 35%, more than 1 in 3. Overweight and obese for income, same pattern. Lower income kids, higher rates of overweight and obesity. The last kind of social determinant item we looked at was the issue of safety, and we asked questions on the survey about if the parent feels that the child is unsafe in the community and unsafe at school. Here again, you see the disparity with white children, parents of white children, about 5% saying they feel that their child is unsafe in the community, whereas for Hispanic children, it's 14%, nearly 15%. Similar pattern for income with our lower income, parents reporting a much higher rate of feeling that their child is unsafe. And you can see a similar pattern for safety at school. If you don't feel like your child is safe in your school or your community, how likely is it that they're going to go out and play, go out and exercise, that you have neighbors that you can count on, that it's a safe, healthy environment? And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my co-presenter, Heather, who is our early childhood person. I'm the data person, that's why I did this part. She's going to tell you why this all matters.
Good afternoon. So as Allison mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit about, I think she did a great job actually of talking about why it matters. It's great to actually sit in the audience and hear somebody else telling the story on early childhood. It's great. But I also want to talk about what we actually did with the data and why we produced it in the first place. But first, the conclusions. That we were able to draw from the data were really that we could, within Colorado, we could identify health disparities in children by the age of 5, which I think we all were expecting that we would be able to demonstrate that we can see these disparities in newborns, and but we were able to demonstrate with Colorado data, which we've heard back from a few folks, that that's really been powerful to be able to see it right here at home. Also, low-income and Hispanic children may start out at a disadvantage and then work at the social determinants level to achieve health equity early in the life course is critical to impact disparities throughout the life course. So essentially, we took this data and I should say that the health statistics folks did the hard work of analyzing the data and providing that data to us. And then very quickly, actually, we proceeded to take about 18 months to mull it over and figure out, well, how can we best present this to the folks who need this information? And so for goodness sake, please do pick up a report in the back of the room. Oops. So the objectives around the report, while we could have gone in so many directions with the report, we really focused on, and I'm not going to go through these in order, but number one, making the case for addressing social determinants early in the life course. Early childhood being such a pivotal point in the life course, knowing what we know about the impacts of poverty early in the life course. Also demonstrating the existence, as I mentioned, of early childhood health disparities in Colorado. And the intended audience initially was the early childhood councils within Colorado, which are local collaboratives composed of early care and education folks, health, mental health, family support, so really well situated to be looking at matters of social determinants. The Health Integration Initiative is actually an effort through the Colorado Trust to build health more better into the systems building work that the early childhood councils are already doing in local communities. So why early childhood? And given how the title of this particular session, we may very well be preaching to the choir about the importance of this stage in the life course. But some of these quotes come directly from some of the work out of the National Scientific Council from the Center on the Developing Child at Harvard. We've known for quite some time that the stressors that occur in early childhood, coming from poverty, issues of race, family stressors, really can lead to lifelong issues with learning, so it's a factor in school readiness, behavior, physical and mental health. And we continue to see the impact of those issues, that impact throughout the life course. And then most recently, hopefully, you all have had an opportunity to see the foundations of lifelong health are built in early childhood, the most recent report out of the center, which told us that those early experiences are actually built into our bodies. So the effort to, and I apologize this didn't come out as well as it could, the effort to produce this report really was a partnership between the Health Statistics Unit providing the data, the Social Determinants of Health Work Group within our Prevention Services Division at the Health Department, who actually produced this particular framework that includes the life course along the left-hand side. And then I sit within Maternal Child Health, so taking some of taking the data, taking the concepts and the framework and saying, okay, how does this apply to this particular critical period of the life course? And this is just demonstrating how we took what was recommended by that work group, the Social Determinants of Health work group, in terms of recommendations, and how we translated them into something that was meaningful for our early childhood folks in Colorado. So starting early, in early childhood, developing mechanisms to collect and use social determinants data, advocating for and defining public policy to achieve health equity, ensuring coordinated interagency efforts, which again, the early childhood councils are really positioned to do well, and building community capacity to address social determinants. Our next steps, and I apologize that I rushed through this, I'll be happy to answer questions once our session is finished, but our next steps are really continuing to develop training and technical assistance on social determinants and those concepts for local public health and the early childhood councils. We've started down this road a little bit in that one of the first areas that we identified that we could provide training on would really be policy. As we present these data, the doom and gloom around social determinants, let's make sure that we're also providing the tools so that communities are able to really address the social determinants, which they are most in tune with, knowing their own issues locally. And then including relevant early childhood indicators in our social determinants data set, which we are developing at the health department, and then also aligning the health equity framework with our early childhood Colorado framework in Colorado, helping our early childhood folks to see how those two frameworks are complementary. Okay, thank you so much.